Katrina. Katrina, guys, bit of a round of applause again for Katrina.
Thanks, Stephen. So before the break, we went through all about what is mental toughness. We talked about why it's important and how to recognise mental toughness in yourself and others. What we're going to do now is spend the next hour or so looking at how do you actually build your mental toughness. So, you know, we talked about when we might be presented with challenges that, you know, we need a bit of confidence. We need maybe sometimes a little bit of commitment to help us pull through right to the end of the goal. We said that, you know, sometimes it's things are challenging or that we might feel like life's out of control or our emotions get out of control. So what we're going to do now is help us to build some skills in being able to take more control over your life, your emotions, have commitment, handle challenges, and you know, feel more confident about those challenges that you face. What I wanted to do first was show you a video. What I wanted to do was show you a video. Who can remember, I know it's going back a long time ago now, who can remember the Australian Open in 2012 between Nadal and Djokovic? It was a tennis match that lasted almost 6 hours. Did anyone watch that? You watched it? Can you imagine playing tennis for 6 hours? So I think it was, I saw a clock and it said 5 hours and 53 minutes this game went for. It finished at 1:30 in the morning. What can you tell us about anything about what happened in the game? I know it's a very long time ago now. Yeah, there was moments of, you know, one was winning the other one. It was like it oscillated all throughout the game. Did anyone else see it? Yeah, there was times during the game where they had leg cramps. I mean, like they were playing for 6 hours. It was just extraordinary. So what I wanted to do was share a video with you, which is an interview with Djokovic. It was at 4 a.m. in the morning. So he'd played almost 6 hours of tennis. He's then having a media, he's with the media at 4 a.m. in the morning. So let me share this with you.
But this one, I think, comes out on the top because it's just the fact that we played almost 6 hours is incredible, incredible. I think it was, it's probably the longest finals in history of all Grand Slams, and just to hear that fact is making me cry, really. It's, I'm very proud, and you know, even when I was 4-2 down, I still pushed myself up to the limit, and you know, one of the points, I think, of the match was at 4-all fifth, when it was the first point when after 35-40 shot rally, I think we both went down on our knees. And but for these kind of matches, I'm a professional tennis player, and I'm sure any other colleague tennis player would say the same. You know, we live for these matches. We work every day. We're trying to dedicate all our life to this sport, to come to the to the situation where we play 6 hour match for Grand Slam title.
So, you know, a 6 hour game of tennis epitomizes mental toughness, right? I mean, really, physically, what is the difference between Nadal and Djokovic? They've got fabulous tennis skills. They're both amazingly fit. And as he said, they've trained all their lives for this type of match. And, you know, he talked there about having one rally that lasted 35 to 40 hits. I mean, that's just an incredible rally of tennis, that you can maintain focus with someone who's opposing you, who is such an amazing tennis player, to hit a ball, you know, back to them, you know, 15 to 20 times. So I wanted to share that with you because it is a real demonstration of someone's mental toughness. And sport is a great way to demonstrate mental toughness because a lot of sports people train in mental toughness skills. So today I'm going to take you through a number of skills that sports people use to build their mental toughness. Did everyone hear that? So at 4 years of age, he visualized himself being the world number one. So that's a really nice segue, because our first skill that I'm going to talk to you about today is mental rehearsal. And visioning things is the same as mental rehearsal. So there's four things that I'm going to focus on today, and one of them is this. So with mental rehearsal, the way that it works is that the mind is very interesting, in that what you envision in your mind, the brain can't recognize the difference between what is real and what is imagined. So if you envision something in your mind, when you actually do it for the first time, the brain thinks you've already done it. Okay, so there's absolutely no difference. The 1992 Olympics, Linford Christie was in the 100 meter sprint. And in that race, there was an interview of him, and I couldn't get a video of it, I'm sorry. But basically what he talked about in that interview that I read was that at the end of the race, he was telling the reporters that he stood at the starting line of that race and he visualized the 43 strides that he was going to take to get from the starting line to run through the ribbon at the end, and visualized himself doing it and how it was going to feel when he won. And he won that gold medal. And they actually say that 90% of sports people use mental rehearsal as a way to prepare themselves. You know, one of the things that you talked about before, when you were saying you were presented with a challenge, but keeping a vision in mind helped you. So that's the benefit of mental rehearsal, is that it enables you to keep this vision at top of mind and to rehearse what it could look like. When I first started presenting, so when I was back at university and I did a commerce degree, we had to get up and present almost every project. And I was a very, very nervous presenter. So I'd get up and my hands would be shaking and I was very nervous. You know, I'd be feeling sick in my stomach, going, I can't do this. So what I started to do was do some mental rehearsal. So I would actually arrive early at university on days that I had to present, and I would go into the theatre room where we were going to be presenting, and I would sit in a chair and I would look back at myself, imagining myself over here, and I would visualise what I would look like doing my presentation. And I'd have my presentation in front of me and I would see how I'd be interacting with the group, what I might be saying, what I might be doing, and I'd walk through my presentation in my mind. And what I found was that the more I did that, the more confident I got and the more relaxed I got. I used to still be super nervous, but I was able to control it more. So I might have been super nervous on the inside, but people didn't notice it so much on the outside. So there's an example of where mental rehearsal can be really helpful. So the example I just gave you then was that I was in the audience, like Matt, I'm in the audience and I'm watching myself do something. That's a way to mental rehearse. So you can see as a spectator what you're doing. The other way to do it is to actually put yourself in your mind's eye as I'm here doing it. So I still do this now and I just do it out of habit. Don't even consciously think about it now, but you know, when I walked in the room this morning, as I'm walking around the room, I start visualizing in my head, you know, me talking to people, me interacting with people, looking at people's faces and what that's going to feel like. I walk up onto the stage and I visualize what it's going to be like from a different perspective. So then when I actually get into it, it's like I'm at home. I've done it heaps of times. Even though, you know, today this presentation is the first time I've done it, and this group of people is the first time I've been with you. But it all feels normal because I've mentally rehearsed it. So when you say that Djokovic actually envisioned himself at four being, the world champion, There's lots of sports people that do that. So once you visualize something in your mind, the mind knows no different. The only thing that's holding you back then is you. So what I'd like you to do is, So before we go on to the next piece, which is around mental rehearsals, I'd like you to have a think about, when do you try this? Or have you heard other people that do it? So Matt, you're coming up to, you know, you've done a long distance walk, you come out to a run, you know, you might start rehearsing that, like when you're running your training runs, you think about what it's going to be like during the half marathon. What I'd like you to do right now is just think about for yourself, when do you use mental rehearsal? Or are there any examples of stories that you know? So have a think by yourself, and then I want you to have a chat at your table about what you do. So let's talk about mental rehearsal. How do you do it at the moment? Or how do you know of someone else who does it well? What are you going to share with me? Yes? Yes? Okay. A number of times. Okay, so you'll kind of say it out loud. Okay. Say it out loud, say it in your head. Yep, what else? And look, that's the great thing about things like role plays, because it's not just it's mentally preparing you by actually doing it. It's not the real life scenario, but it could be. So once again, that kind of saying it out loud, saying it in your head. But the other thing is, think in your head, well, what could that person say back to me? Is that what you were saying you do? Yep. So think about their responses. Okay, so you put yourself in your shoes and you put yourself in their shoes. Okay. Do we know anyone who does this really well? Or have you heard stories about people who've do mental rehearsal very well? Actors. Okay, talk to me about that. Yeah, so that's kind of like that physical rehearsal. What about some of the people that just use like visioning, so where we're saying, well, I see it from my point of view, I see it from their point of view, I'll say it in my head. You know, you talked earlier about having a vision. So, you know, vision can actually give you an ability to mentally rehearse, because you're telling yourself that vision, and that vision is real. One of the things that I would say about vision work is, if you ever feel like you are not necessarily getting as close to your vision as like Novak Djokovic, where he envisioned at four he would be the world champion, is potentially your vision is not real enough. So, and what I mean by that is, you know, to have a vision that is, you know, I'm going to speak at the next I Can Do It conference versus visioning, they're two different things. So visioning is where you know your vision and you envision yourself in that situation. So you make it really real. You feel what it feels like. You think, how would I be thinking if I was in that situation? If there's my vision over there, how am I going to be thinking? How does that feel? And get yourself into that feeling. Feel it in your body. Think it in your mind, how you would think in that, if you were in that space where your vision is. Think about how you'd act. You know, would you have your head held high, your chest out? Like, what would you be doing differently to what you are now? And really get yourself into that. Get into that person that's part of that vision. And that's mental rehearsal. Okay, so I think it's wonderful that, you know, a number of you have got clear visions and goals. So now just take it to another level around rehearsing what it actually looks and feels like. Does that make sense? Because, you know, this is what sports people do, and this is how they make their dreams a reality. Yes, they get up out of bed every morning and they work hard and they physically develop their bodies and they develop all of their skills. But once you get to Olympic level, really, the only thing that's different is up here, because they've all done all the same training. Okay, what's there, what's left is that mental toughness that gets them through. So we talked about the four C's. If we go back to those, you've got them in your workbook. I want you to think, just tell me, if we think about mental rehearsal, how's that going to help us with our four C's? Right. Okay, so controlling emotion. So rehearse how I'm going to feel if I lose my cool here versus if I keep this together, how much better am I going to feel at the end? If I'm able to help someone else control their emotions through this particular confrontation that we're having, imagine how it's going to be at the end. Yeah. So Matt, on your example before around commitment, the way that mental rehearsal can help you with commitment is when things start getting tough, is start thinking what it's going to look like at the end. Okay, start envisioning what it's going to feel like at the end once you've done all of this. You know, last year when we did Coast Trek, we did the 55 kilometre, which is quite a trek. It's lots of sand. I think we do about 15 kilometres of sand during this trek, which is just pretty crappy, to be honest with you. And as I was going through the walk on the actual day, what I kept doing, so as we got to, it must have been about the 45 kilometre mark, so we had 10 kilometres to go, and all I was visualising at that point in time was seeing my kids at the end. I knew that they were coming, and I just kept that picture in my mind. I kept that picture in my mind about how excited they would be for me, how proud they would be of me when I, you know, had walked 55 kilometres. That is what kept me going. So that helped me maintain my commitment. And, you know, at those times, like when you've got to the 45K mark and you've walked 15 kilometres of sand, you've got 10 to go, you know, you've got blisters, you've got chafing, you've got sweat everywhere. You know, it's just not attractive at all and it doesn't feel great. What makes you feel great is that vision at the end, because if you focus on right now, you'd give up. So visioning is not just something you can use to prepare for an actual event. It's what keeps you going. It's what keeps you committed to a cause. So we've talked about control. We've talked about commitment. How can visualization or mental rehearsal help you with confidence or challenge? Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing when you can visualize yourself doing something with success, how much it builds your confidence to do it. Has anyone got an example of where they've done that before?
A lot of my riding, so like I'm pro wakeboarder, and we've got state titles and nationals coming up in the next few weeks. And I mean, this is all very, very relevant to a lot of the books that I've read and different mindset courses that I've been a part of. And as far as visualization, like when we're trying new tricks, like with wakeboarding, you get into the top end, you've got a rope which attaches to the boat, and there's a mental side of it when you do tricks, like you're flipping and spinning and handle passing, and there's a mental side of it that if you get caught in a rope, like your body's attached to this rope and you're stuck, and so you're going to get pulled by the boat, and it doesn't end well sometimes. So that positive, like you said, that visualization of how the trick's going to go. So you visualize yourself doing the trick, executing the trick, and finishing, landing the trick. It puts a lot of that fear and that unknown out of your head when you can see yourself, you know, progress.
What a great example. And look, I think what's even greater about that is the fact that you talked about the vision of getting caught in the rope. So can you imagine if he was actually trying to do that, and in his head, he's thinking about getting caught in the rope. Okay, what do you think is going to happen? Get caught in the rope, right? You know, you're going to stuff it up. So the mind is amazing. that it only knows what you, the way you tell it to go is where it's going to go. So, you know, using those strategies to actually overcome that fear, and not just overcome the fear, but think how successful you're going to be at the end. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I was young, my father, and he still does it now, says things like, you know, if the kids do something, he'll say, oh, don't do that, you'll break your neck. It's like, seriously, Dad? Like, what kind of positive reinforcement is that? And, you know, I remember one night we'd been out and my mum and dad had had a couple of drinks and I was 17 or something and we'd left the keys wherever we had been. And I said to Dad, look, it's fine. You know, sometimes when I come home from school, I don't have my keys. I just jump in our bedroom window. It's on the second story. And I just climb up here and it's fine, Dad. No worries. Anyway, I'm climbing up the side of the house to get in. And Dad goes, oh, this is stupid. You're going to break a leg. Within 5 seconds, I fell down and broke my arm. I had climbed in that window I don't know how many times, but mentally that's what went into my head. You know, so not, I'm not saying it was my father's fault because I probably shouldn't have been doing it to start with. But, you know, it is amazing. If you tell your mind something, it will go there. Okay, so whilst we've talked a lot about, you know, life examples or sporting examples, what I want you to think about is how could you use this for work and your life? So go to your four C's that you've got. Look at where your strengths are and where your opportunities are. Where could you use mental rehearsal, visioning to help you, whether it's to leverage some of those strengths or to focus on some of your opportunity areas? How could you use it? So we've been through mental rehearsal as our first kind of toolkit, a thing to put in our toolkit around helping us build our mental toughness and our inner power. The next thing we're going to talk about, rituals. So there's different types of rituals. So there's pre-performance rituals, there's positive self-talk, there's relaxation rituals, and there's team rituals. So I'll give you an example of a pre-performance ritual that is quite interesting. So my husband plays Golden Oldies rugby, so really serious rugby, right? And he has a pre-performance ritual. He gets quite nervous about playing Golden Oldies rugby. And he has this ritual where if I get in the way of it, he's like, oh my God, I'm going to get injured if you get in the way of my ritual. So, you know, he has to get ready the same way. He wears the same undies. He has, you know, he's got like his shower routine when he goes to the toilet, which I think is probably a bit of a nervous poo or something. So he's got this ritual that mentally prepares him for this game of Golden Oldies rugby, which of course is not playing for sheep stations, right? It's just, you know, all it is just a regular game of rugby. But it's his way of mentally preparing himself for this game of Golden Oldies. So what about you? Have you been a part of a sporting team before, or have you had to prepare yourself for something? So I say to you that one of my rituals for preparing for today is to walk in and visualize, you know, what's actually going on. That's part of my ritual. Part of my ritual for doing something like this is I will talk through the whole session plan once before I do it. So I'll just talk it through to myself, but I'll talk it through. And I think about what someone might say to me. And that's my ritual for getting prepared. And I know as long as I've done those two things, I'm fine. It'll all just flow from there. What I'd like you to do is I want you to have a chat at your table around what pre-performance rituals do you have or do you know of? You know, you might know of some funny ones. I know people who wear, you know, the same type of undies or the same type of socks, the same socks, even though they might have holes in them. They say, well, I have to wear these socks because otherwise we'll lose the game or something like that. So think about what pre-performance rituals you have or you know of and just have a chat to the person next to you about it or as a group, please. Okay. I can hear a few laughs going on, so I'm thinking there's a few entertaining pre-performance rituals happening here. So tell me, what are some pre-performance rituals that you or others might have? What is it?
I get shunned by this actor at in Sydney on how to prepare for speech.
Yes.
Are you going to get your testosterone levels up?
Okay. Can you come up and give us a? Do you want to come up and give us a demo? Because you're not prepared, right, for public speaking. So what is there, like a routine that you have to go through?
Yeah, you go for a brisk walk and you start getting your heart pumping.
Uh-huh.
And then you do...
Why do you do that
bit? I don't know. It's just something that kind of works. And you get next to a mirror, if you can.
Yes.
And you just step there and you step to the side and slightly do a haka sort of thing and go... and what it does, it's really stupid, but it really pumps you up.
Yeah, nice.
And some actors and they'll yell and scream.
Yes.
And do that sort of stuff. So you do that stuff. And if I'm in a space where I can't do that, I actually visualize doing that.
Oh, nice.
And then I get up and do a public speech or something like that. But I'm already.
Yeah, so they do say singers do a similar thing, don't they? So singers will do the la 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 and the pa 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 pa, and they do all these funny things with their mouth and, you know, just to prepare their face and their throat and their tongue for what they have to do. Yeah, nice. Thanks for sharing that. That's good. Yeah. Okay, what else?
I used to do full contact fighting. So
okay.
When we were preparing for a tournament, we had to do we'd do a lot of weights, and then we'd move to cardio. But the last few weeks prior to fighting was just all conditioning, so punching, hitting each other. But your body couldn't do that from the beginning. You had to work your way up.
Right.
You do it, and if you got it out of sync, your body just wasn't prepared to get hit when you went into the ring. So,
right. So you had to go through that.
Yeah.
Right. 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 So there's like this kind of, this ritual is about, you have to go through this process or physically your body is not going to be ready for it. Yeah. Nice. Thank you. What else? Aha, uh-huh. I like these ones. Yeah, so and why is that? Yep. Yeah, so I think that's the thing, like some sports people, that's their thing, right? If that's the way they do it, the left knee brace first and then the right one, that's the way it's always done. And, you know, Rafael Nadal has a very ritualistic way of getting ready for a tennis game. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but, you know, he moves his chair to a certain position, he puts his water down, his everything is, it is almost OCD, the way that he does it. But he does that because that's just the ritual. He's not really thinking about it. It's just happening and it's all part of the mental process to prepare. And basically what happens is that if you were to do the right and then the left, what it does is it just interrupts your mental preparation. It's not that you're necessarily going to think that everything's going to go bad. It's just an interruption versus this is just the way it's done. This is just getting me in flow. So this is what I continue to do. Nice. Okay. So we've got the left knee versus the right. The left, then right. Uh-huh. Oh, right. Okay, so left knee in the brace, right in the boot first. Uh-huh. But it's good, right? You know, like that's your ritual of being able to prepare yourself mentally. You probably, like you say, you're not really, you don't even know consciously why you're doing it because you don't need to be conscious of it. It's all just mental preparation. Has anyone got anything else that they wanted to share around a pre-performance ritual? Shall we move on to the next one? So the next one is around positive self-talk. So when we talk about positive self-talk, you know, a lot of people talk about like affirmations. So I'd mentioned to you that when I first started doing lots of presentations and I was quite nervous. I used to have an affirmation that I'd say to myself, which was, I'm calm and confident in all situations. And clearly I said it to myself enough that I can remember it now without even thinking about it. So I used to have to read it off a card so I'd remember the words because I'd be so nervous I wouldn't be able to remember anything. But now it just comes to me. So there's this positive self-talk that I've given myself now that if ever I start to feel a little bit nervous, that just comes into my mind. Has anyone got any other self-talk that they use? I've heard like, you can do this.
I guess maybe focusing on good qualities of yourself.
Uh-huh.
And reminding yourself of
them. Right, okay, yeah. So remembering why you're good at this and why you can do it. You know, you're really skilled. It's wakeboarding, is that right? Yeah, you're really great at this stuff. Okay, you fell over before, but you're really great at this stuff.
I guess affirmation, I was saying to the guys, well, we're just kind of being on process. As I like prepare for an event, we've got two comp passes, that's five tricks up and then five tricks back. So like the mental rehearsals, I visualize each trick and then set up, execute, and then finish each trick, and then set up, execute, finish. And so I visualize that, and then this ritual and the affirmation, I guess, off the dock is the last thing I say to myself off the dock is I've got this.
Uh-huh.
So I just forget about everything else, forget about thinking about each trick and just think I've got this.
Okay, so one of the things I love about that affirmation is it's in the present. Okay, so sometimes we can say things like, I can do this, I will be okay, so that's over there. I've got this is right now. I've got this, not over there. Not, I will have it, I've got it. Okay, so one thing about positive self-talk is you want to make sure it's saying you've got it and you've got it right now. You're not will be there or I not want to be, not have to be, I am. Does that make sense? So it's right here, right now, I've got this. So interestingly, there was another bit of a ritual you said there. You had a three-step process. What was that? Set. Okay, so that's another form of ritual, okay, is that you can actually go, all I have to remember is three steps, that's it, okay, because then your mind is mentally prepared. It's just three simple steps. I've done this stuff over and over, so I've got this. Has anyone got any other self-talk that they have other than, you're an idiot. We don't want to hear that kind of stuff going on. What kind of positive self-talk do you use?
I used to actually practice presentations in front of a mirror.
Yes.
And that was from when I was very young, and I used to do poetry standards and stand up and do that. And I used to have to, my father made me stand in front of the mirror and constantly do the poem in front of the mirror so I could criticise myself and all that sort of thing.
And, of course, until tell
I
yourself how wonderful you were as well.
So then later on when I started doing other types of presentations, I just continued to stand in front of the mirror. If I was nervous about it, if I wasn't sure if I was going to be good or not, you know, I'd stand in the same wall mirror.
Nice. So mirror work is amazing. There's a lady called Louise Hay and another guy called Robert Holden. Robert Holden is a happiness expert and they both do a lot of mirror work. So mirror work can be a fantastic pre-performance ritual and it can also be a way to provide yourself positive self-talk. So if that's something that works for you, then you should do it. It is much harder looking at yourself eye on and giving yourself some positive self-talk than it is, you know, just saying it to yourself, because you've got to look yourself in the eye and you really mean it. Is there anything else from a positive self-talk?
Just on that, looking in the mirror and saying affirmations, it can be more effective because you are looking at yourself in the mirror. It's more effective doing that way rather than being elsewhere and saying it in your mind. You're saying it to yourself.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what Louise Hay and Robert Holden talk about, is how effective positive self-talk is when you actually eyeball yourself and say it to yourself in the mirror. Yeah, so, you know, critiquing is great. We just have to make sure it's balanced. okay? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, Matt, I hope you're okay if I just share this story for a moment. We're talking about commitment. We're talking about Matt's training for the half marathon. And, you know, we're saying how sometimes, you know, we're training for something and we're focusing so much on where we're trying to be that we forget about actually being proud of ourselves for where we've got to. I remember when I was training for the half, when I first ran 13 kilometres, and I was just like, oh my God, I've just run 13 kilometres. That's the longest I've ever run in my life. And so, I could have just moved on and gone, okay, well, I've run 13, I've got another 8 to go. But I didn't. I was, you know, that was the end of my run that day, but I was just so excited about it. And that's what I was saying to Matt. He said that he ran 11 Ks on the week, and I was like, happy days, how good is that? Like, you've run 11 Ks. And I think sometimes we forget to give ourselves some of that positive self-talk that helps us maintain commitment. So the next one is around relaxation, rituals. And Stephen talked about this earlier, that maintaining your energy is really important. And we're going to talk a bit about energy management in a moment. But relaxation rituals can really help from an energy point of view. When my first son was born, we had lots of problems with him sleeping. And, you know, he just wouldn't go to sleep, and then when he'd go to sleep, he wouldn't sleep longer than about 45 minutes. And, you know, when you have that for the first 6 months of a child's life, by the time you get to them being 6 months old, you feel like you need to be put into an asylum because you haven't had any sleep. And I was like, you know, we need to get a solution to this. And so we engaged a sleep nurse, and one of the things that she talked about was having a relaxation ritual at nighttime. I was thinking, okay, well, what's this all about? And what she explained to me was that you just have to have some kind of thing that you do every time before it's bedtime. So they know in their mind it's triggering them to think it's nearly time for sleep. So the suggestion that she had was it was dinner, bath, stories, and bed. I said, okay, fine, we'll try this. Now, four-step process, once again, a ritual. And I thought, surely that's not going to work. Surely, after all the controlled crying that I'd done and sleepless nights, a simple four-step process could not be that easy. And sure enough, it did. So we just started talking to him about, you know, we'd be at dinner. Okay, next step is, you know, it's dinner, then it's bath and stories and bed. Bath and stories and bed. We just kept saying the same thing. And literally after three nights, he was going to bed on time every night and staying asleep. So, you know, from 9 months of age or something, I had, you know, a child that slept through the night. So, you know, it was just amazing just from that relaxation ritual. Now, my husband has a ritual with my youngest daughter where they'll have a story and then they do this thing called Think About. And Think About is something that he does with her where he makes up a story. Think about this and fairies and mermaids and things like that. And what's wonderful about that is if ever she's in a situation where she might be feeling nervous about something at school, we now use that, or with her friends or something like that, we use Think About as a way to help her to visualize a positive outcome. So what can be great about the next day for her to get excited about. So, you know, there's just a couple of examples of relaxation rituals. Does anyone have a relaxation ritual that they wanted to share?
With my three daughters, we basically had a ritual of dinner, bath, pot, by bed.
Right.
And by within the first couple of days, first week, they were sleeping extended periods of time. So we were putting them down typically around about 10 o'clock, getting them up at 6.
Fantastic.
And that was with all three. And that was with...
Sorry, they weren't triplets. They were...
No.
Oh, goodness. That's a lot of work. Isn't that amazing, right? So just a relaxation ritual that you're able to go by. Okay, anyone else got a relaxation ritual?
Yeah,
yes.
So when I'm on the tarmac, I just close my eyes and relax. I usually wake up halfway there. I sleep for 20 minutes.
Nice. Fantastic. So you've got yourself into that ritual that, okay, now's the time, I just switch off and I'm asleep. Isn't that great? Awesome. Anyone else? I used to have lots of trouble sleeping, going to sleep at night. I'd be thinking about lots of things. And I downloaded this music one time. It's a Louise Hay stress-free music. And it's like a ritual for me now. I literally turn it on at night. I think I'm asleep in about 3 seconds. Like I've got to the stage where I don't really even hear it anymore. It just kind of starts. It used to, at first, I used to almost listen to the whole track, which goes for nearly 30 minutes or something. Whereas now I hardly hear any of it and I'm sound asleep. So interesting, if we can get ourselves into those rituals, our brain just goes that way. So the last ritual is around team rituals. Does anyone know of any team rituals that, or do you have any team rituals that you use? Sorry? The haka, exactly, nice ritual, yeah. You know, totally meant to psych them up and psych the opposition out.
We do this one. Julie and I try to do it and try to get some involved, but they often look at us and roll their eyes. And so when we come in, the how do you feel? And I'm like, how do you feel, Julie? She goes, I feel great. And they all go, so we do
this,
I feel great in the mornings to make them feel
nice.
They don't often always.
They don't often always come to the party. At least you're trying, right? I mean, rituals can take time. It's like culture change. It's all about ritual. You know, the rituals can take time for other people to catch on. So keep up with it. It's when people see things becoming the norm that they'll start doing it. So, you know, you sometimes need to do something 100 times before people will start seeing it as the norm. So keep going with that. Anything, any other team rituals?
Work related, we have a daily huddle, which is just 15 minutes, review the day before performance, and then attempt or endeavour to get people geared up or energised for the day ahead, what the actions are. But, and that's daily, so without fail,
same time.
Same time, great. So things like that where it's like ritual, same time, you do it every day and this is it. From that time, you're on, you know, which is great because, you know, if people come in the morning and they might be a bit sluggish, it's like, well, guess what? It's game on, 9 o'clock, it's time for our huddle and we're off from there. So it all of a sudden turns people on for the day. So that's a great example. Okay, so what I want you to do is go back to your four C's now and think about of the four rituals that we went through, whether it's pre-performance, positive self-talk, relaxation, or team rituals, how do you think that can help you? So self-talk, we talked about helping through commitment. So keep us going, keep us focused. Let's move on to the third strategy for helping you build your inner power, tap into that mental toughness, and that is to play to your strengths. So we're talking before about, you know, sometimes we might be more critical of ourselves than what we are focused on our strengths. Interestingly, I was on a coaching call the other day with a client and she was talking about going for a promotion, and throughout the first 10 minutes of the conversation, so she started by saying to me she was considering putting herself forward for a promotion, and then for the next 10 minutes she told me all the reasons why she shouldn't get it. And I said to her, so can I just ask you, have you had this conversation with anyone else? And she said, oh no, just with myself. I said, okay. So I said, I think we need to do a bit of work here before you have a conversation with anyone else, because if I was the person recruiting for this role, I wouldn't actually consider you right now. She's like, what do you mean? I said, well, you've just spent the last 10 minutes telling me all the reasons why you don't have the skills, you don't have the experience, and you don't have the capabilities to do this job. So tell me, what are your actual strengths? And she hadn't actually realised that she was doing that. And what we did was we actually then mapped out, we said, okay, well, what are the kind of skills and capabilities that they're looking for in this role? What kind of experience would help someone succeed in this role? Now let's think about the experience that you've had and what are your strengths? What are your capabilities from previous roles that you had? And all of a sudden, she started to realise that actually 75 to 80% of the job. She was quite skilled for and was in a great position to be promoted into this role. But unfortunately, she'd talked herself out of it before she'd even given her a chance, given herself a chance to sell herself for the job. So playing to your strengths is really important. We need to focus on our strengths just as much as we do our opportunity areas, which is why today I've asked you to, you know, balance your feedback when you're going through this mental toughness piece. Is think about, where are your strengths? There is a survey that you can do to start recognising your strengths and to be at your best. I'll give you the web address for it if you'd like it. It's called, the survey is called the VIA Character Strength Survey, and it's done by a guy called Martin Seligman. He is kind of like the grandfather of positive psychology, and the survey address is VIA, V-I-A, character.org. So VIA, character, character.org. If you go there, you can do a free survey. It takes 10 minutes to fill out the survey. You can do it for adults and children. And it gives you the opportunity to rank what are your top five strengths. And where we talk about strengths from Martin Seligman's point of view, he talks about when are you at your best. So one of my strengths, for example, is love of learning. And I know when I'm, you know, in like a rut is because I'm not stimulated and I'm not learning. Whereas I know when I'm put in a situation where I've got, you know, an amount of positive pressure and I feel uncomfortable and I'm learning things, that I'm so much happier and so much more energized. So if you do that survey, it can give you an idea of how you can tap into your strengths more. How many of you actually take time kind of on a regular basis to consider your achievements and strengths? Yep, some of you? Okay.
2 weeks ago, we sent out a survey to our staff.
Yes.
About us.
People are always good at giving feedback. Yeah. It's a gift. Yeah, good. You know, sometimes feedback can be confronting, but, you know, it's all part of the learning experience, isn't it? One of the things I'd encourage you to do is try on a regular basis to ponder some of your strengths. So, you know, when you do your 90-day plan and you review that on a regular basis, review your achievements towards that plan. I sat down with my team a couple of weeks ago and, you know, there was times where I was feeling like we were bashing our heads against a brick wall with some of the projects we were trying to do. And I said, look, let's just stop for a minute. Let's get our project plan out and let's just review how we're going. And we actually went through it, and out of the three projects that we had set out to achieve last November, one of them was 100% done, another one was 80% done, and the other one was 90% done. So whilst we had felt like in that particular week we weren't achieving and we were bashing our heads against the brick wall, we'd actually achieved so much, but we'd lost a bit of sight of that. So I'd really encourage you to spend time and balance the amount of time that you critique yourself to the amount of time that you spend thinking about your strengths and the things that you do well. So the last piece of the puzzle here that I wanted to take you through was what Stephen indicated before, was around energy and balance. So energy from a mental toughness point of view is really important. I love sporting analogies, so I apologise if I'm kind of using another one. And this is actually a Rafael Nadal, because he's quite an interesting person to study. If you're ever interested in studying someone for mental toughness, study him. He's good. So Rafael Nadal has been studied by a guy called Lur around how he manages his energy. And basically, energy management can be really effective if you oscillate. So you oscillate between extreme times of pressure to extreme relaxation. And they've actually done studies on Rafael Nadal around his heart rate and what happens between sets. So he will play a set and his heart rate goes right up, and then the 25 seconds that they have between each set, his heart rate goes right down, really low, to a complete relaxation. So he uses that 25 seconds to just oscillate him right down into a point of complete relaxation and then ramps himself back up again. And you know, you know yourself, there's times in life where we've got like extremely stressful conditions, and what we need to do is we need to oscillate down and make sure we're using relaxation techniques to bring us back down and use the downtime to really relax, really relax our minds, our bodies, everything about us, so that then when the pressure comes back on again, we can pull it back up. So oscillation is really important from an energy management point of view. The other thing that's important is to take regular renewal breaks. I got given an Apple Watch for Mother's Day last year. I don't have it on today because it rings when you're when you've got it on, and I don't like have someone ringing me while I'm presenting. And of course, you can put it on silent, but it vibrates on your arm and it's a bit distracting. So anyway, I got this Apple Watch, and what it does is every 90 minutes, it tells you to stand up. And interestingly, in all the studies around renewal, what it talks about is taking a 90-minute, every 90 minutes to take a break. So 90 minutes minimum, maximum 120 minutes, you should take some type of renewal break. Okay, whether it's get up and go to the toilet, get up and get some fresh air, get up and make a cup of tea, get up and have a chat, go and get a drink of water. But you should have some type of renewal break. It's the same concept of oscillating. So, you know, you've ramped yourself up for your 90 minutes and then you got your, you know, 5 minute break. And what happens is when you have that renewal break, you will then go back with much more energy and zest into the activities that you've got to do. Does anyone use any type of energy, like ways to manage their energy? Yeah? Okay, great. Nice. Yeah, great. So 30 minute sprints. So 30 minutes focus, 5 minutes off. Nice. You know, I know people who set timers, you know, set a timer, 30 minutes, I've just got to focus until the timer goes off. Anyone else got something that they use?
I was at a session in Melbourne and it was around the 3 o'clock coffee break.
Yes.
And that replaced the need, your body's need to then have a pick-me-up, because the sun is a natural energy. And I don't know if it was placebo effect, but everyone felt more energized in the afternoon off of that. Just natural light getting out into the pressure.
That's awesome. It was interesting. I was talking with Grant earlier, but Grant and I both drink decaf coffee. And I think whether decaf has a placebo effect or not, but I find, you know, I'll kind of, you know, start work in the morning. I give myself, a 90-minute charge of work, and then I go for a walk to get my morning coffee. Now, obviously, I'm not getting a hit of caffeine. I'm just getting a decaf coffee. But it's the actual walk, the fresh air, the, you know, moving my body around that gives me that renewal to keep going. Anyone else have a renewal activity that they'd like to share? One of the things I've got a small guide that I wrote around work-life balance. One of the things I would say to you around energy management is managing the amount of energy that you give to yourself versus the amount of energy you give to work. Now, I coach a lot of people, and I would say 80 to 90% of them, one of the problems they talk to me about is not having enough time for themselves, or I spend too much time at work. So I wrote this book so that people could start getting life in perspective. And what it is, it's just a simple guide that actually says to them, it's a bit like a balance sheet. So that's why it's called a balance sheet. It's like, weigh it up. How much time do I spend at work, life, friends, myself, other things? And how do I want it to be? And they, you know, help themselves get change. And one of the biggest things I notice when people do it is they realise that they're spending way too much time at work and not enough time on themselves. So if you want me to send you a copy of that, I'm more than happy to do it. You can SMS, if you SMS the word balance, hopefully my automation is set up correctly. If you SMS the word balance to that number, 0418 638 103, I'll send you that book, and it'll be a guide where you can just do a quick, similar to what you've done today, quick activity just to work out whether or not you've got your work-life balance in check. So just before we wrap up, I just wanted to refer you, I'm not going to go through these today, but I just wanted to refer you to the other pages in the book. We've talked about the four C's, and I've talked about a number of strategies that can help you with developing in these areas. But then there's another four pages in there. There's another page on each of the four C's with lots of practical tips that you can use in your personal lives or in your work lives to actually build your mental toughness or build the mental toughness of others. Now, I did actually put a last page in your book, which was around kind of capturing some of your key insights from the session and putting that into an action plan. But obviously, I realised that Stephen will get you to do that tomorrow afternoon, and you've already captured some of your learnings. So unless anyone has any questions, that's it from me.
Fantastic. All right, so what about a big round of applause for Katrina?
No worries. Thank you.